Hi, welcome back to the Incidental Economist Podcast. Today's date is October 14th, 2011. This week, there was a lot of news about the new USPSTF's recommendations for prostate cancer screening with the PSA. It's caused quite a bit of commotion, including some debate in the recent Republican presidential candidate debate, where Newt Gingrich made some statements about what this kind of new recommendation means for health and for the well-being of men across the country. But it's something that involves a lot of science, and it's something that involves a lot of studies and also policy, and therefore it was something that we've blogged about quite a bit, something we thought would be worth covering in today's podcast.
Okay, so let's back up and talk about what the PSA test is. It's a blood test to test for the potential presence of prostate cancer. But it is far from perfect, and it often indicates the presence of cancer when actually there is no cancer. And then even when there is cancer in the prostate, it's not at all clear that it's cancer that needs to be treated. Because what's true of prostate cancer, and not necessarily true of other cancers, is that it's can be very slowly developing. And one thing that autopsy studies have shown is that a third of men between ages 40 and 60, and three quarters of them after age 65, have cancer in their prostate. And many men die from other causes with cancer in their prostate. So people are living and dying with, quote, prostate cancer, but the prostate cancer is not what's killing them because it's very slowly developing and therefore doesn't require treatment. However, when people get their PSA test, if they get one, and they see that there's an indication of the potential presence of prostate cancer, it's very common for people to want to just go in and do something about it, even though the treatment may not be necessary.
Yeah, there's so many important things in what you just said. I actually think it's worth unpacking them, and even just almost one by one.
Yeah, hit it.
And so the first thing that's important to know about screening tests is that they're supposed to be incredibly sensitive. I mean, that's the whole point, is you want to pick up everybody who potentially has the disease. And of course, the most sensitive screening tests would just say everybody is positive. And then you would, of course, think, well, everyone's got it. Let's keep working it up. Mm-hmm. So you have to balance that with making sure that you don't have too many false positives. So you want to pick everybody up who has disease and try to limit the number of people who don't have something you need to do. And so the first thing to know is that the PSA is incredibly sensitive. We're picking up tons of people who don't actually have prostate cancer. And when a test gets too sensitive, it's not a great test, because then, like I said, you might as well just say everybody has it and then continue down the road to further treatment. So that's the first big problem. And the second is, I think, what Austin hit when he said that everybody who has prostate cancer doesn't die, and so doesn't die of prostate cancer. So not all prostate cancer needs to be, operated on or needs chemo or needs radiation. That tons of people die every day who had prostate cancer, and didn't even know or didn't affect them and it didn't kill them.
Yeah,
and that is,
I think, the majority of men
part of
die
the problem
with it.
Of catching it, too much of it.
Yeah. Yeah. PSA testing has become, I think it's sort of the norm. Most men receive it. They're certainly offered it. You can of course decline it, and some probably do. But studies have shown that there has been a doubling of the detection of prostate cancer since 1985, from 1985 to 2005. So that's a 20-year period. There's been a doubling of detection of prostate cancer, not a doubling necessarily of actual cancer, but doubling of detection. That's due to higher PSA testing rates, but almost no, or just a very small increase in the chance of dying from prostate cancer. Went from 2.5%
to 3%. I want to stop you there, because I know you're going to start getting into the research. Even before then, we have to own that the way the United States healthcare system works and the way that the American culture works is that if I say to you, you've got cancer, you're going to get therapy. Like there, we don't sit around. We are not willing to watch.
Of course,
we
it's your choice. It's your choice. You can decline it.
You could, but the vast majority of the American people are going to
absolutely.
Say, get
I mean,
it
just
out.
Just think about it. I think I would have a hard time, and I know this research. If someone said, you know what, we know you've got quote prostate cancer. We've done the PSA. You can also do digital exams, and you can go in with probes and pull them out. We can show you the cells. Look at that. That's a cancer cell. They can explain it all to me. After going through hours of that, educating myself about my own prostate and what's in it and think about it, I think it would still be hard for me to say, you know what, I know the statistics, I'm not getting treated. It would be hard.
Yep, it would. So if we diagnose it, if we get the PSA and we diagnose it, we're going to have therapy. Now that would all be okay if, you know, doing all of this led to significant reductions of dying. And this is where the USPSTF weighs in with the evidence, because there's been research doing this, and I'll let you sort of walk us through that. But we know what happens to people who get the PSA screening.
So many of them get treated. There's a variety of kinds of treatment. You can have what's called a radical prostatectomy, which they just take the organ out and hopefully all the cancer with it, unless it's metastasized.
I hate to keep interrupting you, but I actually, for a while, debated becoming a urologist.
Oh.
So I was actually debating between urology and pediatrics back in medical school. So I spent a number of months doing urology. And let me tell you, radical prostatectomies are really big procedures. I mean, you think you just go in and get out. Holy crow. That is a major procedure, and it is not something you'd want to go through unless you have to.
It's major on your body, but it's also major in terms of cost.
It's about $50,000 for watchful reading and radical prostatectomy.
About $50,000. So it's a major procedure on your body. It's a major procedure in terms of cost to insurance and also to revenue for the urologist. I think that's important to point out. And then you can get various forms of radiation therapy for about 50% higher in cost, up to about $78,000. And then all the way up to almost $100,000, actually, some of the very fancy radiation. So, and since I'm on cost, I'll come back to the health consequences. But I'll just say that another study has shown, recent study has shown that practicing care a little more judiciously in this area could save up to $3 billion annually in Medicare. So it's, it's a small, very small percentage of the Medicare budget, but it's a lot of money. There's a lot of money here, and a lot of this going on, not a clear benefit in terms of mortality. And then we haven't even talked about the side effects. So you go, you get a PSA test.
Well, let's focus on the mortality first, because I think it's important.
I thought we did, but you
we
got more
to
say. Go ahead.
To understand what happens.
Yeah, go ahead.
So in 2005, the average American man had a 17% lifetime risk of being diagnosed with prostate cancer and a 3% risk of dying from prostate cancer. And in the best studies with sort of the best outcomes, they've shown a 20% reduction in the risk of death by doing the PSA screening and then, you know, whatever follows after it. But you have to remember what that means is that if you have a 20% reduction in the risk of death, means that the average man in America who chooses screening goes from a risk of 3% of prostate cancer death in a lifetime to a lifetime risk of 2.4%. And so that's the reduction. You know, because 20% sounds huge, but you're really going from a lifetime risk of 3% to a lifetime risk of 2.4%. So in context, that is a reduction in death, but that's the positive. But you have to also think about the negatives, because this surgery and this treatment has enormous sequelae and morbidity, and it can actually, you know, really have an impact. You can tell us about that.
Yeah, so, suppose you have your prostate removed or radiated. You might think, okay, great, killed the cancer, life's back to normal. Well, for about half of men who go through this kind of treatment, they become impotent. For many of us, that's kind of a big deal. If someone said, oh, let's do this procedure, by the way, there's about a half chance that you'll be impotent. I think you'd worry about that, and you'd really want to know if that procedure was worthwhile. For other reasons, incontinence is also quite common. So your physician probably would tell you all this. By the way, you might be impotent. By the way, there's a good chance you'll be incontinent. So, you know, here you were, possibly in the prime of your life, had a PSA test, prostate cancer detected. You said, "Got to do something," and so you do it. And now maybe you're incontinent and impotent, and maybe cancer-free. And there's a pretty high chance that all of that was for nothing, that the cancer would not have
killed him. But about 0.5% of the people that go through the surgery actually die soon afterwards.
There's risk of death,
whether
correct.
It's a complication or not.
There's risk of death.
The risk of death is there too.
That's right. And all of this is at high cost. What's this other statistic I read was it takes 48 people have to get treated before there's one life saved. So, 48 people, about half of them end up impotent. Many of them end up incontinent. They've all gone through tremendous heartache and turmoil, and only one of them actually needed it, and we don't know which one.
Yeah, and that 48 is actually from most of the American literature. There's a real controversy, you may have heard about it going on, that there's the American studies and the European studies. The European studies have shown the bigger benefit. So when I talk about the 20% reduction, which takes you from 3% lifetime risk of dying to 2.4% lifetime risk of dying, that's the best outcome. That's the European data. The American data shows even a lower actual risk of reduction of death, so that the number needed to treat is actually significantly higher. Austin's right. Almost 50 people need to be treated to get that one life saved. And of those 50 people, as we said, one may die. It may probably less than one, because it's less than 1% will die after surgery. But up to half will have incontinence or impotence or both. There are other nasty side effects, things that can occur. And to say that, this is looking over about a decade. So it's like, yes, we'll reduce your lifetime risk of dying in a decade by a tiny amount, or we'll give half of you, let's say about, maybe less than, incontinence or impotence from now until that, for the rest of your life. That's real. That is a real significant side effect. And when framed properly, it is completely logical that many, many, many people would not want to undergo that treatment in order to have those side effects with the tiny reduction in death. Now, some people may, and it is their right. And the USPSTF did not outlaw the test. They did not make it illegal. They did not say your doctor can't discuss it with you. In fact, they didn't even make it so that insurance won't pay for it, because there's already legislation that says regardless of what the USPSTF says, Medicare is going to pay for it. Private insurance can pay for it no matter what the USPSTF says. They have any right to do so. So nothing about this was outlawed. But still, you will get politicians, you'll get people like standing up and saying this is a death panel. And that's where I sort of get my tackles up, because we can have a rational discussion about the pros and cons of this. And many, many, many people, including the people in the USPSTF, think that the harms likely outweigh the benefits. Because once you get that PSA and they tell you, we think you have cancer, you're going to get the surgery. Even if you don't need it, you're just likely to get it. And it's going to come with potentially common and significant outcomes for a very small actual long-term benefit.
What we tend to see is people want to argue against the body of evidence with anecdotes. So they'll say, oh, but my brother, he was detected with prostate cancer and he had a surgery and now it's gone and it was a success. And you don't know, that doesn't prove that particular case, that the treatment was necessary. You don't know what would have happened if he hadn't gotten.
Yeah, he could have been one of the 47.
Exactly,
that didn't
need and very likely he was. Possibly he wasn't, yep. But obviously the statistics are in favor of the other side. And B, it's an anecdote. It's one person's experience. And C, that's perfectly fine. If you want to get treatment, you should get treatment. What the recommendation is that as a routine matter, it's probably not a good idea for everybody to get treatment, and we should all think about that carefully. You can still go get tested, get treated, but it's far from clear that it's worth your while.
And everybody needs to take a deep breath. This wasn't outlawed. That's the thing. It's like nobody came along and said you can't have it anymore. Go
right.
Get it.
Right.
If you believe that the reduction in death is worth any other side effect, that you'll cut off a leg to have the prostate cancer out of your body, go for it. Mm-hmm. That is your right. But we have to be able to talk about this in terms of benefits and harms in a rational way.
Well, the other thing I find amusing is that people go see physicians for a reason. They are experts. They go and they want their expert input. So, you go to your urologist, you go to your family doctor, and you want to know, you say, you know, well, what do you think, doctor? What, you know the literature, you know the medicine, you tell me. Well, here you have not just one, but a whole body of physicians and experts weighing in on a matter of medicine and providing advice. That's not just one or two opinions. That's a very serious deliberative process coming out with a recommendation. I mean, for me, that's fantastic. When else am I ever going to get, I don't know how many people actually are involved in this, but probably dozens. When else am I going to get dozens of people to focus on an issue? Now I know vastly more about prostate cancer testing and treatment than I did before because of their work, and probably more know it more accurately and more thoroughly than I could get it from my own physician, who is just one person and only knows his set of things. A urologist knows how to do one thing, a radiologist knows how to do another thing. They're going to just tell you their best advice, which is not complete. That's how I view it.
Yeah. This is also times when it's just like, yeah, you have to know something else is going on, whether it's conscious or subconscious, because again, people go for second opinions all the time, and you often get two doctors who disagree, and yet the world is not set on fire.
Yeah.
But when someone says, hey, you know what? There's a lot of harms that come from this as well as some benefits. So we're going to say that because of the harms and benefits, we're just going to say we don't think it should be something absolutely that everybody should get. In fact, we're just saying we don't think you should. And yet, you're free to. And you hear the groups that, some groups go crazy and start saying they're like murdering people. You have to start questioning what else is going on.
Yeah.
Whether there's, a lot of this has become politicized. And so people often do this from both sides for political gain. Sometimes it's financial. I mean, it's no, whether it's conscious or subconscious, there's no mistaking the fact that, like, when they talk about mammograms, the radiologists start to lose their minds. When they talk about the PSA, the urologists start to lose their minds. There is a subconscious, at least, sort of financial driver. And also, I have to remember, there's just a bias of the worldview that you see. I work at a population level, so I understand very few people sometimes get these diseases. But if you're a urologist, then tons of people you see have prostate cancer.
Yep.
And so you think everybody has prostate. You think it's rampant, and you gotta stamp it out. And so that's what you see. And so, of course, urologists are going to feel in general that it's a much bigger problem perhaps than someone who looks at the bigger picture does. That's natural. It's not evil. That's natural. And you have to weigh those biases. And when I say that, I don't mean it's always financial, but there are biases, and we have to be conscious of them, and they have to weigh them. And I'm sorry, but whenever I hear a politician start to spouse, on any kind of healthcare issues, you also have to weigh their biases as well. And their bias right now is get me elected.
Yeah, or even just attention.
Yeah, but that too, which is also, I guess, get me elected.
Well, I don't think I have much more to say on this, except I could just say quickly why there's differences between the European studies and American studies. And,
sure.
And the difference is that we're much more aggressive in the U.S. about early testing. And so mm-hmm. when we catch people with diagnosed prostate cancer, or for that matter, diagnosed almost anything, we're catching them at a younger age and with an earlier stage of development in that disease or that cancer compared to Europe, where they're much less aggressive about this. And that means that in Europe, when they catch someone with prostate cancer, it's at a later stage. And so when they treat people with prostate cancer who have it at a later stage, those are people who are more likely to have died from it. So when you randomize,
yep.
you get more distinction between the control arm and the treatment arm. In the US, when you do that, you get much less distinction because you're catching all these younger, much healthier people with much earlier stage disease. So, a recommendation that I don't believe the US PTF is saying, but they could, is have an age-based criterion. We're not recommending testing for this age, but you should have it at a later age. I don't believe that's what they've done, but they do it for other things like mammography, where they're basically saying we shouldn't be routinely testing so many people at such a young age because we're just catching early cancers that never develop into things that need to be treated. If we want to catch the ones that are more likely to be treated, we should be catching them later. That's when they show up.
Yeah. Well, these kinds of things are not certainly going to go away. I've heard sort of in the background that cervical cancer screening recommendations are coming down the pike, and I have no doubt we'll have controversy all over again, but we'll be continuing to discuss this on the blog. We welcome discussion that is rational, because people can absolutely disagree about this, but we just have to try to avoid, I think, the inflammatory language of that one side is either trying to kill the other or doesn't care. Because they're really, you know, everybody involved in these kind of things is, most of them are physicians. They wonder if that's the reason. They're not trying to kill people. But, you know, that seems to get lost, especially in election years. But thanks for listening. Once again, this is the Ancidental Economist Podcast, Aaron Carroll and Austin Fracht, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week.